A law school hypothetical. What if in 2022 Republicans gain control of the House and impeach Hillary Clinton, former Secretary of State? Would she have a defense under the principles established by the Senate saying that they can put Mr. Donald Trump on trial? Also, you'll hear my views on a PBS program called Frontline, which totally mischaracterized and distorted both of President Trump's controversial speeches, the one at Charlottesville and the one in Capitol, on The Dirt Show. This morning on The Dirt Show, I'm going to conduct seminars on two very important issues. Number one, a constitutional seminar on the implications of the Senate vote the other day to take jurisdiction over the impeachment trial of a former office holder, that is, citizen Donald Trump. We'll explore in a law school type fashion the implications of that decision for the future. And then I also want to talk about journalistic ethics today, about how far we've come from the days of Walter Cronkite and how journalism has become weaponized and so partisan. And I'm not talking about CNN now. I'm talking about PBS, Public Broadcasting System, and the show Frontline. We'll talk about that in the second part of my opening monologue. Let's turn first, though, to the Senate vote. As I understand it, the Senate voted 55-45 that they could put on trial a former office holder, in this case, the former president of the United States, but a former office holder who no longer serves in office and therefore can no longer be removed solely for the purpose of disqualifying that former office holder from holding future office. Now, if that's the ruling of the Senate, let's consider the following hypothetical. As I've said before, when I taught at Harvard for 50 years, I always used hypotheticals. The students called them hypos, and I was famous for my hypotheticals, often creative, sometimes a little bizarre, but they often made the point by showing the limitations or the logic of what happens if you accept a given principle. So that's what we're going to do today. So here's my hypothetical. 2 years from now, the Democrats lose control of the House. That often happens in a midterm election. Let's assume hypothetically, I'm not making a political point here, I'm hypothesizing. The Republicans gained control of the House of Representatives. It doesn't so much matter if they also gained control of the Senate from my hypothetical, but that's also very possible. So let's assume for purposes of my hypothetical, Republicans control the House and they also control the Senate. Then they decide to follow through with the implications of the Senate vote against Mr. Donald Trump. And so a member of the House of Representatives makes the following resolution and offers the following article of impeachment against Hillary Clinton, who was the Secretary of State. She is no longer the Secretary of State, but that doesn't matter, according to the Senate's 55-45 vote on Mr. Trump. So Mrs. Clinton gets impeached. The articles of impeachment include the misuse of her email server. I think myself, that's not a basis for anything, but I'm sure there are Republicans who would disagree with me. And her actions or inactions over Benghazi. You remember that's when in Libya, an American diplomat, an ambassador, was killed, and there were allegations that she engaged in wrongdoing. Let's assume that those are impeachable offenses. I don't think the Benghazi thing would even come close because that's an act of state. You can agree with it or disagree with it. But the use of computers and other things, which former FBI Director Comey said was not quite criminal but condemned it, let's assume that those two become the articles of impeachment. I would ask my students at Harvard, distinguish those cases. Let's assume you're now a lawyer for Hillary Clinton, and if Hillary Clinton were to be impeached and she asked me to be her lawyer, I would be her lawyer. I would, of course, take on the case because I took on the Trump case out of principle, not out of partisanship. So now I've hired you, my students, to be my research assistants. I'm defending Hillary Clinton. How would I distinguish her case from the case of Donald Trump? They were both office holders, subject to impeachment. We know the Secretary of State can be impeached. We know that cabinet members have been impeached in the past. So that's not a distinction. They both, Trump and Clinton, left office because their terms expired. Now, Hillary Clinton's a little different. She didn't have a specific term. She just retired from her office, and it was turned over then to John Kerry. So, but they both are no longer office holders. Both could conceivably run for either president or some other job. Hillary Clinton is about the same age, maybe even a little younger than Donald Trump. She could conceivably run for office. The only distinction I can see is one of time, and that is President Trump was impeached while he was president, and the trial is going to take place immediately thereafter, whereas Hillary Clinton was not impeached while she was Secretary of State, and the trial would occur almost a decade later. Well, that's an important matter of degree, but I don't see that that is a principal distinction or a constitutional distinction. If you can impeach a former office holder who is no longer holding office but who is eligible to run for something in the future, it shouldn't really make a difference if the impeachment occurs right after the person left office or the trial occurs right after the person left office, even if the impeachment occurred while the person was in office. The Senate, after all, is conducting a trial. And what the Senate voted on was not whether or not the House had jurisdiction to impeach. That was not the vote. The vote was whether the Senate had jurisdiction to try somebody who had been impeached, and they said yes. And so it seems to me that principle would apply equally to Hillary Clinton. Now, it's a hypothetical. I don't think Hillary Clinton did anything impeachable, and I doubt that Republicans would be as foolish as the Democrats have been in trying to impeach a former office holder. But it could happen. Now that we've weaponized, now that the Senate, with this 55-45 vote, has weaponized impeachment and the trial and said it applies to former office holders, what is the limiting principle? Where does it stop? What if we find out that President Bill Clinton committed an impeachable offense after the one for which he was acquitted, or President Obama committed an impeachable offense? How far back do we go in history? Does the person even have to be alive? I guess the person has to be alive, because if you're going to disqualify them from future office, unless you're talking about heavenly office or hellish office, then you can't disqualify them. So there's one limiting principle. The former office holder has to be alive. Does the former office holder have to actually be running for office? No, of course not. Donald Trump hasn't announced whether he's going to run or not. He's eligible to run, but so is Hillary Clinton. And so is Barack Obama. He can run for Congress. He can run for the Senate. John Quincy Adams served with great distinction in the House of Representatives after he was president. And I think I'm correct that President Taft served as Chief Justice of the United States after he finished his term as president. So none of that is precluded either by history or by logic. So I want to hear from you. You're my students, and I want to hear you distinguish the Hillary Clinton case or any other case from the Donald Trump case. And if you can't, some of you will say, hey, that's a good thing. Let's put Hillary Clinton on trial. No, that's not my view. That's not why I'm giving this hypothetical. I don't think Hillary Clinton should be put on trial. I don't think she committed an impeachable offense. And as you know, I don't think a former office holder can be put on trial. So I'm against both the trial of Donald Trump and the trial of Hillary Clinton. I want to hear from you. Are you in favor of both trials? Are you against both trials? Both of those would be consistent positions. Or are you against the trial of Donald Trump and in favor of the trial of Hillary Clinton? You're going to have a real uphill battle trying to persuade me that that's a correct analysis. Or are you in favor of the trial of Hillary Clinton and against the trial of Donald Trump? Either of those, any of those combinations are possible. But you're the students. You have to come up. Your homework assignment is to come up either with distinctions between those cases or arguments as to why I'm wrong in making the comparison. So that's point one in today's seminar. Point two really changes the subject, but, you know, relates to, again, hypocrisy and double standards. So the other night I was watching PBS, public television, And I lived in Boston for many years, so WGBH was my PBS station. I liked it. I was on it a lot. I was a member of the Advocates Group, which won a Peabody. I always debated the liberal side of liberal conservative issues. And so I was watching PBS, and I was watching one of my favorite shows, Frontline. And I really expected a lot from them because Frontline has a reputation. It's won all kinds of Peabody and other awards. And they had a show about how President Trump has destroyed America. Okay, fair point. You can agree with it. You can disagree with it. And they focused on two speeches that President Trump made. You might imagine what the two speeches are. The one in Charlottesville, where he said, quote, "There are very fine people on both sides," and for which he was condemned all over, and which led Vice President Biden at the time to announce or say that he would run for president. That was the speech that stimulated his run for president. So it's a very important speech in American history. And the second speech they focused on was the December 6th speech, which is the basis for President Trump or Mr. Trump's second impeachment. And so I watched with interest as millions of people watched Frontline, giving them credibility because they've earned their credibility over the years. And I was shocked, absolutely shocked at what I saw. They presented President Trump, then president, saying in Charlottesville, "There are very fine people on both sides." And then they basically said the theme of that whole thing was he was saying that Nazis and white nationalists and white supremacists were fine people. That was not only the implication, but that's what they basically said. That's because they quoted only that part of the speech, very fine people on both sides. But right after that, shortly after that, he said, quote, "I'm not talking about the neo-Nazis and white nationalists because they should be condemned totally." Well, I know he said that. You know he said that. But the viewers of Frontline don't know he said that because they edited his speech to take that out. They deprived their viewers of an important fact, namely that he explicitly excluded neo-Nazis and white nationalists from his characterization of very fine people. You wouldn't know that if you watched Frontline, because the Frontline editors deliberately, maliciously, with malice aforethought, and quite contrived way, edited his speech so that the viewers wouldn't know that he excluded neo-Nazis and white nationalists, so that they could say that he didn't exclude neo-Nazis and white nationalists and lead the viewers to the conclusion that he thinks neo-Nazis and white nationalists are very fine people. Shocking. You know, you might still think that it was wrong to say there were very fine people on both sides. That's fair, as long as you hear the whole speech. As long as you hear him say, "Very fine people on both sides, I'm not talking about neo-Nazis and white nationalists, they should be condemned totally," then you can form your own opinion. Everybody has the right to their own opinion, but you do not, Frontline, have the right to your own facts. You do not have the right to deny your viewers and your listeners the context in which the statement was made and the explicit exception that President Trump gave. "I'm not talking about neo-Nazis and white nationalists." But you, Frontline, were talking about neo-Nazis and white nationalists. You fooled, you deceived, misled your viewers. Then we come to the next speech. So they show part of the speech where he says, "Go to the Capitol, go to the Capitol." But they deliberately and maliciously exclude the two key words from his speech. He said, "I want you to protest peacefully, and patriotically." You wouldn't know that if you watched Frontline. Frontline wanted you to believe that President Trump was inciting people to violent conduct, and as a result of that, that he didn't want them to engage in peaceful protests. You could still conclude that if you saw the whole speech. You could still make the decision that dog whistles, whatever. Maybe he really was sending coded words, but at least present the words. Then the viewers can make their own decision. Again, you have a right to your opinion, but not to the facts. And Frontline denied viewers the fact that he said peaceful and patriotic. That is unethical, irresponsible journalism. I have to tell you, if a lawyer ever dared to put in a brief a statement by the opposing side and left out the qualifications, if somebody put in a brief, my opponent said that there are fine people on both sides, and he meant there are Nazis, and left out the fact that he said, I'm not talking about neo-Nazis. If somebody said in a brief that my opponent incited violence and left out the fact that he used the words peaceful and patriotic, that lawyer would be disciplined, the brief would be struck, and the lawyer would be subject to disbarment. Now, you hear a lot of people on the left saying, oh, Rudy Giuliani should be disbarred. The other people should be disbarred. Sidney Powell should be disbarred because they misled the public. They said things that were not truthful. Well, what about the media? Now, you know, you expect that from CNN. CNN did that to me. They took out the words unlawful, illegal from my statement that a president can't be impeached if he engages in a lawful quid pro quo in order to get himself reelected as president, which he believed in the national interest. I had an explicit exception for unlawful and illegal conduct. CNN doctored the tape, edited the words out, and then had their commentators, their paid commentators, accuse me of saying a president could do anything unlawful and illegal, even though I said exactly the opposite. I'm suing them for that. And Frontline could be sued, not going to be sued, but they could be sued by President Trump, by now Mr. Donald Trump, for totally distorting what he said. But I'm not talking about lawsuits now. I'm talking about the ethics of journalism. Where have we come? Walter Cronkite would never have allowed anything to be on his evening news that so distorted the statements by the people that he was characterizing or describing. He would have put in all the facts, and then he would let the viewer decide. You can put in all the facts and then say, ignore the second thing he said. Ignore the fact that he excluded neo-Nazis and white nationalists. You have a right to express that opinion. You can say, yeah, he said peaceful and patriotic, but he didn't mean it. You can do all of that. What you cannot do as a journalist, what you cannot do as a person in the media, is explicitly and maliciously and deliberately leave out the facts and then tell your viewers what to believe, denying them the opportunity to form their own opinions based on the facts. Now, I suspect that Frontline will win a Peabody or some other award for that show. And the people giving that award won't even know, or if they know, won't consider the fact that this was unethical journalism. Unethical journalism. Yes, I am accusing Frontline of unethical journalism. I'm accusing PBS of unethical journalism. You cannot leave out salient facts when you're presenting an argument and deny your viewers and your listeners the right to form their own opinion based on all the facts. That's why on the Dirt Show, you will always hear all the facts. You will never hear me say anything out of context. You'll never hear me commit the ethical sins of Frontline and GBH and PBS. We expect more of them. They are funded by the government. They are funded by private individuals, decent, good private individuals who expect more of them. We expect more of PBS than we do of CNN, but we're not getting it. We're not getting it. PBS is worse than CNN. Why? Because CNN doesn't have any credibility. Everybody knows CNN is propped of the left, that they only present one side of issues. You expect that they're going to leave things out. You expect that they're going to distort facts. That's expected. So you're not disappointed. And anybody who takes CNN seriously should really not be trusted to make judgments. You expect that of CNN. You do not expect that of PBS. That's why PBS is worse. when they eliminate deliberately facts that might cause many of their viewers and listeners to have a different opinion, come to a different conclusion, they are engaging in journalistic fraud. That's how serious this is. So I'm interested in your views. Tell me what you think. Tell me where we can go to get the truth, where we can go in the media that we can trust. Who can we trust anymore? And when you get a situation where people base their opinions on factual omissions and factual errors, we're never going to bring this country together. We're never going to unite us if everybody has different sources of facts and different sources of information. So again, on the Dirt Show, you're going to hear all sides of every issue. And I want to hear from you. I want to hear from you about what you think of what PBS did. Go back and watch it. Frontline. It was a couple of days ago. And go back and listen to the speeches and tell me whether you think I mischaracterized the speeches. I did not. I listened to them fully and wholly, and I formed my own opinion. And my opinion was negative on President Trump. I think he should have done more to condemn the Nazis and the others at Charlottesville. He did make it clear that he was talking about the people who were opposed to knocking down the statues, and reasonable people could disagree about that. I think he could have done more. I think if you're a person of the right, you go out of your way to condemn right-wing extremists. He did. He could have done more. That's a reasonable view. I think the president should not have given the speech he gave on December 6th in the Capitol, near the Capitol. I think that it was misguided and wrong. But I know that he also used the words peaceful and patriotic. And so I can form my opinion based on the totality of the circumstances, unlike the viewers at Frontline who cannot. And so I want your views on that issue. I want your views on the Hillary Clinton hypothetical. I want your views on any subject that you think is relevant to talk about. Also, you know, you can call me and tell me I'm not covering subjects you'd like to hear about. I'd love to hear from you about what subjects I can cover and should cover, what you're interested in, who you might want to see as guests on The Dirt Show. So let's hear from you. Add the wits to The Dirt Show. Now let's turn to today's callers. Let's turn now to our first call.
Hi, this is John Romano from Miami Beach. I love your show. Is it possible, though, that because the election was not certified yet, that it can't be insurrection against the government, when in fact Trump was the head of the established government at the time and therefore could not have an insurrection against himself? I'd appreciate your comments. Thank you.
That's a really interesting question. Can a president engage in insurrection against his own administration? Boy, that's a new one, of course. I mean, the argument of the Democrats is that he was engaged in an insurrection against legitimate efforts by Congress to end his term. But again, that's a stretch. Insurrection really is against the established government. So you'd be a great defense lawyer. Thanks for your point.
Hi, this is Justin from Vegas. I have a question. So I was listening to Dan Crenshaw's podcast, and he went over some aspects of the Constitution about when they read the votes. And he was specifically calling out that that act is not one of Congress can really like saying yes or no someone is president, that the Constitution explicitly excludes Congress and legislators from actually picking a president. So I was just interested in your take on that. I'm sorry, I don't remember the exact part of the Constitution.
Sure.
And love the show.
Thanks. Well, you know, Congress does have a role in picking the president only if the electors don't, by a majority, select the president. The Constitution provides the electors select the president, but if a majority is not for any particular president, for example, if you have three parties, as we've had on a couple of occasions, then the election immediately goes to the House of Representatives, where the House selects the president by delegation. That happened with Thomas Jefferson. It happened with a number of other presidents. So Congress does have a role, but it does not have a role, as you correctly point out, in determining whether or not there are enough electors to constitute a majority for one candidate. The role there is really not discretionary. It's kind of just automatic, unless there is real controversy. I mean, there have been cases, the Tilden Hayes election, where Congress did decide which slate of electors to pick. But those are cases where there was a genuine controversy within the state themselves. And we didn't really see that during the most recent election. Good question.
Hey, Alan, you said that you didn't see the evidence of the mass voter fraud. Mm-hmm. Could you give us an example of the evidence that you would require to convince you?
That's a great question. Obviously, if I saw evidence that computers were doctored to switch votes from one side to the other, that would be sufficient for me. I haven't seen that. I've heard it alleged, but I haven't seen it. If I saw evidence that barrelfuls of ballots were dumped into the river and weren't counted, sure, that would be persuasive. What is not persuasive is anecdotal evidence about a small number of votes coupled with substantial evidence about unconstitutional violations, like in Pennsylvania, but not enough votes to turn around Pennsylvania. So on balance, I just didn't see the evidence that would cast reasonable doubt on the validity of this election. I know others did, and I'd be in favor of a VIP, a voter integrity panel, to educate me so that I could make a fair determination. It really is a lot like what I said about Frontline. I want to know the facts objectively. Then I can form my opinion. Right now, the facts I've seen lead me to the opinion that the election fairly determined that President Biden should be the president of the United States. But I always have an open mind, and facts always influence my decisions.
Yeah, Alan. This is Ron from Indiana. I was just wanting to know, through the investigation that they conducted with the FBI, and they have concluded that there were rogue actors. How can they put this on Trump? I just don't understand that with the investigative tools they have and the money that they put into these investigations that they could figure out. And I've seen on the news where they have concluded that there's a lot of rogue actors, even from people from other groups, opposition groups like Black Lives Matter or Antifa. I just don't understand how the impeachment can hold up knowing that these new facts are there. So what are your thoughts on that? Thank you.
If there were to be a trial in the Senate with evidence, obviously the defense could put on evidence that there were people who were anti-Trump who had infiltrated the Capitol protesters. The evidence that I've seen so far suggests a very small number. I've only seen evidence of one person. Maybe there's more. I'm not sure that would influence my opinion because it really doesn't matter to me. The president didn't incite it. He just made a speech calling for peaceful and patriotic protests, which is a completely constitutionally protected speech. What happened thereafter is the responsibility of the people who did it. Thomas Jefferson wrote that back in 1801 in a letter that I have hanging in my home. I actually have the original letter in his handwriting in which he says we have nothing to fear from the opinions of others, as long as we are able to correct those opinions, and as long as the law is prepared to step in and prosecute those who commit violence, those who commit violations of the law. In other words, we don't go after the speaker, we go after the lawbreaker, unless the speaker incited, and incitement has a very technical definition. For Trump to have incited the break into the Capitol, he essentially had to have been at the Capitol and he had to be saying to people, break in now, steal Pelosi's server, do this, do that, do it now, do it now. That might cross the Brandenburg line into incitement, but what he did doesn't even come close. Even the ACLU, who wants to see him impeached, said that the speech was protected by Brandenburg, but they take the position that a president can be impeached even for making a constitutionally protected speech. I think that so hurts freedom of speech, but the ACLU no longer considers freedom of speech to be a priority among its other political agenda items.
Just wondering if you would be at all concerned about Joe Biden and the Biden family if the reports of his taking money from China, Ukraine, and Russia are proven to be factual?
Well, of course, if there were factual allegations that turned out to be true, it would cause me concern. I've known Joe Biden for 40 years. My recollection is that I was introduced to him by Ted Kennedy, with whom I was very close. I worked very closely with Senator Kennedy on issues of Soviet dissidents, human rights, sentencing reform, a range of other issues. His chief assistant said that whenever Ted Kennedy had a constitutional issue, he would say, get Alan on the phone. So I worked very closely with Ted Kennedy, and Joe Biden was very close to Ted Kennedy, and I met him, I think, through Ted Kennedy. My recollection is during the 1980 presidential campaign when Ted was running for president unsuccessfully against Jimmy Carter in the primary. I've always thought very highly of Joe Biden. He seems to me like a regular guy, nice guy, a guy who hasn't cared much about money in his life. He lives a very modest life. I was at his home when he was vice president in the Naval Observatory. He had a sukkah, which is a Jewish hut that's you put up made out of wood and leaves on top, to celebrate the Jewish holiday of Sukkot. And so I was invited to attend that event. He seemed to live a very modest life. So it would be hard for me to believe that he was ever on the take. But open mind. You keep an open mind. And I've often been surprised by people. I don't expect I'll be surprised by Joe Biden. I think he will conduct himself in a very, very ethical manner. And I certainly hope so. As I've said before, when a person is elected president of the United States, I'm on their side. I root for them. I root for the country. I'm a patriot. I want to see Biden succeed. I wanted to see Trump succeed. I wanted to see Reagan succeed. I wanted to see every president succeed. Their success is our success. And so thank you so much for your great questions today. I'm looking forward to your answers to my law school hypotheticals and my ethical questions. Keep the questions coming. Keep the comments coming on The Dirt Show. Looking forward to another Dirt Show with your comments filling in the wits. See you soon. An important part of The Dirt Show is your voice, your questions, your comments. Please call 24/7. The number is 216-710-0050. Keep your comments short and to the point. Again, the number for you to call 24/7 is 216-710-0050. Hard questions, criticisms, everything's fine. Just keep your questions short, and I'll answer them all on The Dirt Show.